Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number two of the Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi. Michael Lombardi is here. It's Master Sunday. And we've got a lot to talk about, Michael, in this hour. We'll have Wes Reynolds from the VSiN Long Shots show join us in about 45 minutes, give his favorite round four bets for the Masters. It's also final Sunday of the NBA regular season. We'll know all the seedings. We'll know the exact play-in tournament order by the end of the day today as those games get underway here in about 2 hours with two waves of games, eight early, eight in the mid-afternoon with the NBA. Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, joins us here in about a half hour as well. So big day today. We've got the Masters. Not been a good start, though, for Tiger Woods, who is right now last place in the tournament. Four over through six holes today. He tripled the par four fifth hole, Michael. And, it's honestly hard to watch with how, you know, bad his body looks. And you just feel him. He's grinding every hole right now.
You feel for him every time he goes down and picks up a ball. I mean, you just know his body's in pain. And, you know, he wants to be there. And he has such great respect for the course that he wants to be a part of it, but it's hard. And I think, you know, he was able to get the consecutive make the cut record and beat Freddie on that, but boy, it's gone downhill ever since then. And, you know, it's going to be hard to watch him. It was hard to watch him yesterday. It really was. You could just see him struggling. It was the worst round he's ever had in the tournament in his career. And, you know, and today he may pass that.
And we, of course, always keep this in mind through the betting prism. I mean, Tiger was, like, 73.5 was his round score prop yesterday. Shoots, you know, 82. Today it was 72.5, and a ton of people were betting that thing over. And it's so far that looks to be a very good bet. Four over now through seven holes. He did just get a par on the par four seventh. But, you know, also he's paired with the only amateur left, and was like a minus 250 favorite in that matchup, losing by four right now to Shipley, who is the only amateur who made the cut, and he's even through his seven holes. So a lot going on there. We do have Scottie Scheffler. I know. Isn't that crazy? Imagine being an amateur paired with Tiger in the Sunday of the Masters in your first ever one.
I know. I mean, it's remarkable. And Tiger's got the Sunday Red on, which is the new clothing line that'll be available May 1st for people to buy. It's a partnership with TaylorMade. So kind of interesting how he shifted over from Nike to TaylorMade. And now you like the logo, Ben? I mean, I'm not sure I'm buying that logo. I don't know. It just doesn't look right. I'm used to seeing the swoosh on them. Seeing the swoosh on them.
It doesn't feel like it, like that doesn't have like the blood red texture that we're used to. I don't know. It's just, that's a very small thing, but it doesn't, you're right. It doesn't totally feel the same.
Can you imagine Shipley has the honors over Tiger Woods? You almost feel like Shipley should, look, Tiger, you're better, you know, go ahead. I'm an amateur. You should tee off first no matter what our scores are.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously that's not the case.
I'd just be drinking in every second there right now. As we get ready for the leaders to actually tee off, that won't be for a few more hours. 2:35 Eastern is when Scottie Scheffler and Colin Morikawa go off. Scheffler 7-under, minus 115 right now to win the tournament. Colin Morikawa 6-under, 1 back, plus 350. Max Homa plus 750, 2 back. Ludvig Åberg 9-1, 3 back. And Bryson DeChambeau 4 back at 20-1. Who is your, Michael, who's your pick coming into today? Who do you think takes the green jacket?
You know, I love Scheffler. I just love his demeanor. I love his interviews. I mean, his humbleness, his kind of the ability to kind of not get caught up in how great of a player he is. And he thinks he's got that kind of Tom Brady-ish to him where he thinks he's an overachiever. He doesn't even realize how good he is. And the way he talks to himself, the way he talks to the crowd, the interaction with the fans. I mean, you could tell a lot about a guy on how they interact coming off and on. And I think his ability, one thing I've, you know, in my career, the one thing that I've learned is the people that focus with intense focus, just not focus, seem to be way ahead of everybody else. And Scheffler has that ability. I like Morikawa too. I'm rooting for him. I know, you know, he came from nowhere yesterday to kind of close the gap, and he's going to have another round. But for me, you know, I like watching Scheffler. And I know that sounds a little bit, you just go with the favorite. No, I like everything about him as a person. which then translate to him as a golfer.
And Scheffler yesterday, he's 4-under after 11, totally falling apart, a double, a bogey, and then he goes out and he eagles 13 and just totally rights the ship immediately. I would say Scheffler too. I see Scheffler beating Homa by one. I expect Homa to have a really good day. Push Scheffler. I think it's going to be a great battle as we continue. I do like Homa, some of his props here to go under at 72.5 on his score prop there at DraftKings, which I would certainly be looking to bet under there. Speaking of the Masters, we do have what's on Michael's mind on this Lombardi line Sunday. It's not the Tiger wardrobe necessarily, although we did talk about that. But
No.
You're noticing the interesting trouser look.
I mean,
of
what
one
is Jason Day? What is Jason Day doing? Like, seriously, you're playing on the most sacred ground that has rules. I mean, did you know that when Zach Johnson went on Regis and I think it was Regis with Kathy Lee or whatever, I don't know who it was, but that show, Kelly, it was
Regis
with Kelly,
and Kelly, yes.
That he wore his green jacket. Yeah, he wore his green jacket, but he wore it with jeans. That's a no-no. You can't wear a green jacket with jeans. You have to wear a green jacket with a collared shirt. You have to wear a green jacket if you're outside with slacks. That's if that year that you're allowed to have the green jacket. There are rules that go into this. And so here's Jason Day. He shows up to a place that has rules for everything. You could argue with the rules. You could say whatever you want. You could be your own man. But you show up with this wardrobe where it looks like, you know, there's everything's going to blow away. And you've got this huge mural on your chest that's advertising this new clothing line that you have. And he's surprised that, you know, they came over and told him to take it off. Now, in fairness to Day, he said, look, I respect the course, so I did what they asked me to do. But if you really respect the course and you respect the game, would you wear this? Like, would you wear this? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, at some point, like, have some, again, it proves that common sense isn't common. Like, to me, like, everything about this, they have rules for everything. I mean, look, do you realize, Ben, even though you are a champion of the course, Freddie Couples, Jack Nicklaus, you're not allowed to be on the course without a member with you. So if you arrive at the airport and you want to come over and hang out at the clubhouse, great. You just got to make sure a member's with you.
Even
so, like, there's rules for everything, so, even for those guys.
Yeah.
So, like, and then you wear this on TV, that's on my mind.
That's on your mind. I understand it. You know, the trousers that he's been wearing, and he's been wearing those since the since the start of the year. It's just, it makes him look like the Michelin Man when you get the wind blowing like that. I don't know if you saw that on Friday. I mean, it literally looked like it was like a hot air balloon with the wind. It was like how Brad Allen, the NFL ref. I always say he's like the Michelin Man of the refs. He wears this like the ridiculous suit when it's cold weather. That's what Jason Day reminds me of with the bottom half there.
How do you play good like that? You got to look the part, right? Isn't that what Prop Joe said? You got to look the part, be the part,
I think so.
So, look, I think to me there should be a little bit of coordination between the groups. Like, I was getting confused yesterday with two guys wearing the same blue and red outfit. I think we got to split it up a little bit between groups. Maybe we should coordinate it.
Coordinated, yeah. Hey, it didn't feel the same. There's no Ian Poulter, no crazy, European outfits. Yeah, it is what it is.
Did you like the Payne Stewart knickers with the NFL teams? I love those. I thought that was great. I thought it was cool.
I did too. I would love to see. So it was it was 94 when it was the 75th anniversary NFL. And remember the refs that year? They had the, you know, they did the full like berets, the knickers. It was all throwback. This is what year one 125 as a result. I would love to see if now that we're in not 125, we're in 110 now that it's 2024. I'd love to see some of the same things done in the NFL. But that 94, it's crazy. If you go back and watch of those games, the outfits were nuts. It was wild.
Well, it was great. We're going to get, and then they just passed a rule. We're going to get new. We have a third helmet, which should be fascinating what they come up with.
Helmet, yeah.
Which to me, if I was running an NFL team, it would be a helmet. Like, look, the Packers haven't changed their helmet since Lombardi. So you're not changing that helmet. You know, they wear their throwback helmet at times. The same thing with the Steelers with the logo on only one side of the helmet. But there's some teams that have really great helmets that they've kind of lost. The Eagles, so they wear them now on the throwback, the Kelly green, which is great, you know, where they've gone into a different color. But to me, I think I'm excited to see what they come up with. Some of them will be bad, trust me.
I'm sure some of them will be. You're 105. My brain, I'm like, wait, 94, 20.
That's okay, Ben. I'm bad at math too. Don't worry about it.
We're broadcast, you know, journalism. We were not taught. Elliot and I, who went to the University of Missouri, both of us, we were not taught basic math skills. That's okay. That's just one of those things that comes up with it. That's why for us, it's hard to parse through all these scenarios here for NBA. It is the final day of the NBA regular season. Want to mention that as well here, Michael. What's the thing going into the playoffs here that you are most wanting to see, or at least most intrigued in, whether that's East or Western Conference here as we sit final day of the regular season about to get underway?
You know, I'm really interested to see if Dallas can continue this wonderful run that they've been on since the trading deadline and how they're handling it, right? And I'm really looking forward to that, to see what they've been able to accomplish. I mean, Jason Kidd's done a tremendous job. They changed their team around. Once they got rid of Grant Williams, I think they became a different kind of team, and they were able to kind of figure this out. And so I'm really excited to see. They're the fifth seed currently right now, but I'm not sure who's the best of the West, right? Is Minnesota and the Thunder, are they a regular season team with 56 wins, or they have the element to be a great playoff team? And then I think, you know, Golden State, what does Mike Dunleavy Jr. do if they go into the play-in and they can't get in? I mean, Phoenix, once again, here's an all-star team. We got Booker, you know, they make the Beal trade, and they've got the great Kevin Durant, and they're what, 12, they're 12, they're 15 games over five. They're eight out of first place, and they're a seventh seed. So I think, to me, the West has the most intrigue. Now, the problem with the West is I got to stay up later because those games are on always later, and it's harder. You know, you get the East early. But that's kind of what I'm excited about. I really am. I think, to me, you know, I think there's better teams in the West. I'm anxious to see if Minnesota can continue the way they play with the two big guys come playoff time.
Minnesota, OKC, Denver all tied for first heading into the final day today. You have New Orleans. They can lock up the sixth seed, force Phoenix to have to go through the play-in tournament if New Orleans can beat the LA Lakers today. It's about a 3-point home favorite. And yeah, that Clipper Mavericks, that 4-5 series, I mean, can't wait to see what the series pricing is on that as well. We also have some NFL topics to discuss. We'll do that next. Talk some draft props and NFL headlines around the league when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two of the Lombardi Line continues. I'm Ben in for Femi, Michael Lombardi with us. We've got some great guests here coming up later on in the hour. Jonathan Von Tobel on the NBA, our VSiN senior NBA analyst. In 15 minutes, we'll get some round four Masters betting advice from Wes Reynolds to close out the show. Wes hosts our VSiN Long Shots podcast. That's coming up in a half hour, but we do have some NFL headlines, Michael. It is social media unfollowing season, apparently. That's the thing now. And Brandon Ayuk, he's the latest one. He unfollows the Niners, going through the contract negotiations. There have been rumors about potential trade moves, although GM John Lynch said he wants to keep Ayuk around a long time, doing his due diligence to quell those rumors. So, of course, if you unfollow a team on social media, Michael, we have to address it. What do you see happening here with Ayuk amidst this 49er team that will look to make another deep run after going down in the Super Bowl this past February?
Well, look, I think the Niners, Ayuk had a great season, the best season, almost 18 yards per catch. He gave them a vertical outside. I think one of the biggest misconceptions about the San Francisco 49ers is their explosiveness on offense. Look, they're really good offensively, but they're a yards after the catch team. They do a great job of breaking tackles. They do a great job of getting the receivers the football, moving vertically down the field. But in terms of stretching the outside, and we saw what the Chiefs were able to do with their corners, you know, take the game away from them a little bit. And so they need Ayuk's out there on the outside. They have more inside receivers than outside. So this is a question that I think the Niners have to address to themselves. Is there somebody in this draft that they feel like could replace Ayuk next season and draft him where they're going to pick? Or do they put their focus on the offensive line, which is kind of where I think they should, because they need to improve that offensive line overall. So this is just what goes on. And in fairness to Ayuk, it's a hard market to really understand, the quarterback market, the wide receiver market, because there's so many guys that are making money that haven't really done a lot. You know, last year we saw Odell Beckham get $18 million. You know, did he earn that $18 million? No, he just got it for his name. He's holding out for more money. Will the Miami Dolphins give him more? Maybe they will. You know, he's been paid before in this situation. But I think when you look at where the league is and how teams have spent money on receivers, you know, it's anyone's game. And so, look, Jerry Jeudy just got a big contract, all that. So I think you got to be really careful here, but I know they want to keep him. I think there's no question about that.
About
I think they definitely want
to
keep him.
No doubt.
It just comes down to what do you want to spend and what's the market value.
About to be his fifth year, final year of that rookie deal for Ayuk, and the Niners are expected, at least, you talk about offensive line needing to bolster that. That's what the, if you look at DraftKings, they're favored to take an O-lineman first, have that 31st pick, minus 160 to take an O-lineman. Wide receiver is the second choice, but it's plus 380. And you know, the Ayuk thing, you kind of feel like this. I mean, it feels like one of those natural like offseason storylines where, yeah, sure, Ayuk's upset. I get where Michael's, you laid out where he's coming from, frustrated with where the market is at. You'd think, though, at the end of the day, like they'll find a way here because it is, you know, coming into a fifth year of the rookie deal. And you know, he doesn't want to necessarily go into that having to play for a contract next year. But sometimes that can be the reality as it relates to wide receivers when you talk about a market that has kind of been, as you say, like it's just been all over the place, the variance here of contracts that are being given to these guys. But it doesn't necessarily mean, well, just because bad deals have been given out before means you are going to get rewarded with that. Even if your numbers dictate, you should be getting a lot of money. That's sort of the tough spot Ayuk's in right now.
Right. And there's 11 receivers that have cap value of over $20 million. You know, T. Higgins is at 21 and Tyreek Hill's at 31. And in between is all of them. Deebo Samuel's at 28 of his cap number. And so, you know, one of the things we do know is that Cincinnati doesn't want to, they want to keep T. Higgins for a year because they know they have to pay Ja'Marr Chase coming down the line. And I think ultimately that's going to be the critical component here. And where that goes. And when you look at the teams that have spent, like the Chargers, for example, they're 32nd in wide receiver spending. Green Bay is 30th in wide receiver spending. And for me, what that tells you is they can get it in the draft. Because, look, no one's going to say Green Bay doesn't have skill players. They're 30th in spending. Pittsburgh's 31st in wide receiver spending. And, you know, if they get Pickens to have a big year and, you know, they get Firemuth to get have another good year and they add some other guys, I mean, they can go someplace. Baltimore's down to 27th in wide receiver spending. So I think to me, just because you don't spend money on the position, how about the Detroit Lions? Detroit's 26th overall in wide receiver spending. Do you think they lack it? Now they're going to have to pay St. Brown. There's no question. Sure. But I think there's a way to get to the answer without having to go through the payment of some of these guys that are making above what they should. I mean, when Christian Kirk got that huge deal from Jacksonville, I love how people say, well, you know, Trevor Lawrence needs a number one. Well, they just pay Kirk like he's a big time player.
They did do that. Yeah. And it's, and it kind of, it results in the snowball effect of, okay, well, all these other guys naturally will get paid the way Kirk did. I mean, the reality is not necessarily just because one guy got that sort of payment. But it's fascinating to see what happens now on the Ayuk front, what San Francisco does in their draft too here. Again, favored to take an O-lineman with that late first-round pick going 31st right now. We did, speaking of the draft, Michael, get the at least the confirmation here, some of the guys who will be attending New York. And it's a much smaller list this year. We've only got a handful of guys. It's, I don't know, are they trying to go away from the drama? They don't want the sad green room faces anymore. What's your take on that?
I think a lot of this, Ben, is the fact that nobody knows. I think there's so many variations in this draft. There's so many different ways. Everybody's value board is completely different, right? And starting with the Harrison and Neighbors debate, right? Some people have, now both are going in the first round. There's no question both should be at the, if they want to go. But there's a lot of debate on who is. And I think everybody's top 40, let's say, of the value board is going to be completely different. And that puts the NFL in a tough spot. What the NFL doesn't want is a guy in the green room who sits there and sits there and sits there like Lamar Jackson. And they can't, it's like they can't keep their eyes off it. They go first there. You know, if he's on his phone, they know he's going to get picked. So I think it's probably less is better here because this draft is really a second round type of a draft. It really is, including a lot of the quarterbacks. You're going to get guys that are going to be potential starters. You're not getting a, you know, whether Neighbors could be a blue chip, Harrison could be, Alt could be, right? You know, you could get some of these guys that are blue chip players, but there's probably going to be a line of demarcation. Say there's eight players. And I think ultimately that's why it's so hard to predict who is a first rounder. And on draft day, you know, we're going to do the GM shuffle special on draft day. You cannot critique any team for what they pick once you get past a certain point, because everybody's evaluation is going to be different.
I get it. I mean, there's only now 13 guys, the top three quarterbacks, and at least that's, you know, could it even be that in the top three? Could J.J. McCarthy kind of usurp a Drake May, who's along with Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams, invited to the draft there? I mean, that's where we're at right now, and it kind of leads into some of these discussions, too, of, like, a lot of teams are kind of rumored to say, hey, maybe they want a quarterback, but will the price be right? Will there be the guy out there they want? Will the positioning work out, or will the draft capital be there to get him here? We've got some of these better's choice NFL draft props. We've talked about a lot of these already, Michael, but, you know, Giants, that's been a big discussion here throughout the week. They're at plus 150 to take a quarterback first. Will they stay in the current position they're in of sixth overall? And a lot to decide there, a lot to parse through with where the Giants are at and how they made the decision to pay Daniel Jones going into last year. Where do you see the Giants right now with where a lot of the odds kind of have them, people wanting to talk themselves into a quarterback, but we're just not sure, like with so many other things in this draft?
Well, I think they've done their due diligence. And what John Mara said earlier, and I wrote about this for VSiN.com about, you know, if they fall in love, I'm all for it. And I think they've tried to fall in love. And the word around the league and league circles is they'd love Drake May. Now, does that mean New England takes him at three? If New England takes him at three, I don't know if the Giants are then locked into a quarterback. Would they trade a three with New England? Who knows? I think the Giants are in play. Remember, they lost their second round pick in the Brian Burns trade. So I think you got to take that into consideration. But for me, the Giants have to address this issue. We've talked about it. Look, they brought Russell Wilson in as soon as they could. The first team to visit with Russell Wilson were the Giants. And they signed Drew Lock. Now, remember, John Snyder said at the time that Drew Lock was promised to compete for the starting job. Of course, everybody denied it, but we know that, you know, and maybe Snyder's trying to parlay that into something. We know that Sam Howell was being talked about a lot of teams to be their starter. Snyder was able to get him he beat a couple teams. He beat the Rams for Howell and he beat the Eagles for Howell, which is significant. So anyway, my point here is I think the Giants know they have to address it.
Definitely.
And I don't know if that'll be a sense of desperation, because I think there's going to be a really good player for them. As Joe Shane said, you know, if the quarterbacks go 1 through 4, which is what, you know, he's hoping for, he'll get the second best non-quarterback at 6. Who will that be? Is it Harrison? Is it Neighbors? Is it Alt? Look, he could use an offensive lineman. There's no question. I know that he's got a really good player in Andrew Thomas at left tackle, but the right tackle, Evan Neal, has been a problem since his first round draft.
There's so many holes they could certainly use. Wide receiver is minus 200 here to be the first selection. That just kind of reflects where, you know, the thought is, okay, Neighbors would potentially be there, maybe even a Marvin Harrison Jr. if he slides. That's the thought, but there are obviously a lot of different ways there that the Giants could go if they end up staying there at 6 in the draft. So much more for us to talk about here. Last two segments, Michael, excited to dive into some NBA talk. We'll get our VSiN senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel in here next as our Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line continues right here from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. You just have to sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action, find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not only today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Just visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter bets today. Final half hour for us, Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings. Michael's here. I'm Ben in for Femi, and we're going to talk some NBA, some golf. Masters final round is underway, Michael. Excited to finally get the leaders out here in a few hours at 2:30 Eastern or so. Scotty Scheffler, Colin Morikawa in the final group. We're also an hour and a half away from the first of a big 16 batch, I guess 15 game batch doubleheader in the NBA. Bunch of games start here at 1 o'clock on the East Coast. And Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, joins us right now. JVT, still so much up for grabs here as we got to our progressive guest line on the final day of the regular season. And based on the odds, it would suggest Milwaukee is actually going to fall out here of the number two seed. Big move against them today in the market, as Orlando's getting a lot of the betting love here, up to 6.5 point favorites.
Yeah, and I want to double check to see if there's maybe something going on with another injury here. But we know that Damian Lillard is going to play, but it looks like obviously no Giannis Antetokounmpo. He'll have Chris Middleton by his side, so that should be maybe enough here. And look, remember, Ben, just about 4 days ago, your Bucks took on the Orlando Magic. Damian Lillard was essentially flying solo. Bobby Porter scored 30 points and ended up getting a big win. So I think we're at a point where I kind of feel like the market's maybe overvaluing the situation. And we kind of do this all the time with these teams, right? It's the last day of the regular season. Teams got to win. Market gets a little wonky because you're betting against teams that maybe are resting guys or don't have anything out. But Damian Lillard's still probable, and you're still getting a team that has plenty to play for in their own right in Milwaukee with a win that can get them a two seed in the Eastern Conference. So I think we're getting to a point where maybe there's a little bit of value coming back on Milwaukee. I understand the situation for Orlando, but go back 2 weeks ago. They got a big win over the New Orleans Pelicans. Since then, they're 4-8 straight up, 3-9 against the spread. I think they would be the math. Like, they're just not performing very well by market expectations, which seem to be a little too high for them at this point right now.
JVT, the West, I mean, the Mavericks are playing really well. And obviously, they're headed for a Clippers 4-5 seed. What do you think they'll be? What do you think the line in that will be on the series total?
You know, Michael, it's kind of hard to say because we don't know what's going on with Kawhi right now. The team, the Clippers, are saying all the right things. You know, the MRI reportedly came back with nothing on it, that they don't expect that this is going to bleed into the postseason. So you could take that at face value. But Michael, as a Clippers guy, I remember last year, right, watching them go into Phoenix, winning game one, and coming out of that and not having Kawhi Leonard and an injury report. And yet after game two, he gets a knee injury. He's done for the rest of the series. And then it's reported he actually suffered it in game one. So this team has been far from truthful as to what is going on with the injury news around Kawhi Leonard. So why would we trust them now at this point that he is going to be available? So to me, like, that's the big thing, is obviously the status of Leonard. If he's going to be available at the beginning of the series, Michael, they deserve obviously to be favorites. They'll have home court, but they won't be massive favorites because I think Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks, from a power rating standpoint, have improved greatly. The Clippers, of course, their power rating has declined because of that stretch of about 16 games or playing about 500 basketball. I'll say this, if they're fully healthy, would expect that this is probably a pick series on a neutral. So given home court, we're probably looking at like a $150 series price in there. If Kawhi Leonard is healthy, I think it should be higher than that. I think this Clippers team is a very high ceiling, and they were playing very good basketball down the stretch coming into the postseason. But Kawhi Leonard is the big shadow looming over this whole thing. They could be lying about this thing again. And I'll tell you this, for game one, a week from today, if he pops up as questionable, Michael, I don't know if he's going to be ready there for that series, because that team does a lot of shenanigans with his injury status.
No question on that. John Von Tobel joining us right now here on the Lombardi Line. Follow him at MeJVT and check out VSiN.com. This is a really helpful primer, too. If you're looking to bet NBA today, JVT laid out all the lines, all the situations for all the games, and what is at stake here. And it kind of leads into an interesting discussion, because this is one of those unique days where I think a lot of bettors out there say, okay, there should be a lot of variance. This could be very easily attackable on the NBA card, but it can sometimes be a little bit trickier where the teams in must-win spots don't necessarily cover, and you're always paying the tax there as a result. What's just your general thought process? How do you attack a day like today where there's so much at stake here, but so much involved and baked in the individual lines here with these games?
Yeah, you know, I wrote about it in the piece today, Ben, where you have these nine teams that are playing opponents that have nothing to play for. On average, those nine teams are laying 14.3 points today. Like, it's nuts considering where we're at right now. And I liken it to the last week of the NFL regular season. Like, as a bettor, in the last week of the regular season for me, guys, I actually tend to bet on these teams that don't have anything to play for, because the market just really overvalues the need to win. Like, yes, you need to win, but that doesn't mean you need to cover. And that doesn't mean that you should be inflating a point spread by X amount of points just because that team has something to play for. By the way, we got a good example of this. On Friday night, guys, the Nuggets needed to win, right, so they could control their destiny for that one seed, and yet they go to San Antonio as about 12-point favorites, and they lose outright to the San Antonio Spurs. You see this all the time throughout the week. New York on Friday was about 11-12-point favorite. They need to win to get the best opportunity to get a two seed. They're scuffling the entire time. They don't end up covering that number. So for me, in a day like today, I think it's all about in-game wagering, especially with some of these big favorites. In a sport like basketball, where there's 100 possessions, 102, whatever it is, depending on the pace of play, you're going to be able to get that number to fluctuate back and forth. You'll go back to Friday again, where Dallas was taking on Detroit. Guys, they fell down like 9-4. Point spread moved by like 3 points. So, like, you can get a good number really quickly. So I think today is all about in-game opportunities and betting on some of these favorites in-game and tracking whether or not you can get some of those cheap numbers, because just because you got to win doesn't mean you got to cover.
JVT, is there a team, can any team beat Boston? I mean, they got a 14-game lead on Milwaukee, on New York, 15 on Cleveland. Can anybody beat them come a seven-game series?
Michael, do you really want to know my answer? You know what my answer is going to be.
Yeah.
Philadelphia.
No, don't tell me that. Don't even go there. Don't even. Jeez. Oh, come on.
Knew it was coming.
Well, you and I, I'll make money off of that. I'll definitely make money off of that.
In fairness, I think that they are the team that is just the most trustworthy at this point, right? It's not like they compare to Boston. It's just, if you look around at the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee has been falling apart, hasn't been playing consistently. And Giannis, we don't know what his status is going to be at the beginning of this series that they're going to be in the first round. Damian Lillard said the day that he got hurt that he suffered the same injury. It was a 2-week timeline that puts you right at the beginning of a postseason series. So if he's not going to be available there, we saw him get injured at the beginning of the series last year and they ended up losing, right? So I don't know if the Bucks are trustworthy. I'm sorry, you can believe in Miami after that run last year. I don't think that that is the case. So this Miami Heat team this season, I don't think that they're a real threat. The Cavaliers have completely fallen apart due to injury. The Knicks don't have Julius Randle, and they're a little bit small. Like, you go down the list, there's just not that many trustworthy teams. And at the very least, when it comes to Philly, you get a guy that's playing at an MVP level in Joel Embiid. So it's not like I like full-throatedly believe in them, Michael. It's almost just like process of elimination. Who else are you going to trust at this point just for that answer? Like, if not Boston, who? And I just think that Philly just makes the most sense at this point right now, you know?
Sure, Michael's like, come on, really?
I mean,
but
look.
He doesn't want to get sucked in, but I get it. JVT.
I get it. I get the logic behind it. I mean, they've won seven in a row. So, you know, they got him back. That certainly makes them a better opportunity. You know, watching him at the end of the Orlando game the other night, he was exhausted. I don't know how he would hold up, but, you know, that's just the way it goes. And they are a better team when he's on the court. There's no denying that.
Yep. Well, and Michael, too, I mean, to the point of that Orlando game in the first half, remember, he goes up, lands awkwardly on the knee, has to go straight back to the locker room. Like, you know, that's always the worry, too. Yeah. It's like, is he going to be able to maintain this over the course of a full postseason run if they make it?
Right. The other part of this, too, so as much as the East.
And that's a great point. That's a great point there, Ben, because he falls down so damn much. Like, it's hard to put your money that he's going to stay healthy because he's on the ground every game 5-6 times.
I feel like we talk about it every time that is mentioned on any sort of Sixer game. Yes, as far as the West here, JVT, there's so many matchups yet to be decided here. Like, as just from the pure basketball fan in you, what are you rooting for to see outside of Clippers Mavs, which is basically set as a 4-5? Oh. What do you want to see the most as one of these first round matchups?
Well, to be honest with you, from a selfish standpoint, I want a first round matchup between Oklahoma City and Phoenix, Ben, because I want to bet Oklahoma City. Like, I think that Phoenix right now, the market really likes Phoenix. And the way I've been putting it is, like, it's been waiting for the opportunity for Phoenix to just be kind of good. And then when it started to get their feet underneath them, that power rating on Phoenix, you saw it really skyrocket. And I think that you're going to be able to get a pretty cheap series price on Oklahoma City should they take on the Phoenix Suns in that first round series. Now, I don't think, if you remember, like, I think it was like 3 years ago, whatever it was, where the Lakers were like a 7 seed, they took on the Phoenix Suns as a 2 seed and the Lakers were favored. I don't think it would be that dynamic, but I think you're going to get a really cheap series price on a team like Oklahoma City if they're taking on a team like Phoenix. The Suns have shown you nothing, right, that they deserve this respect. I watched them play my Clippers with Amir Coffey and Bones Highland starting in the backcourt. They're fighting tooth and nail with them out there in L.A. just a few days ago. This team doesn't really deserve the respect that the market's giving them. So if you give me OKC and Phoenix and I get that cheap series price that I want, outside of just good basketball, that's what I want, because I think that's going to be a playable opportunity.
No doubt.
There.
Very telling, too, with the way the NBA is set up right now. That could be a 1-8. It could be a 2-7. It could be a 3-6. Yep. There's still so many possibilities on that. Jonathan Von Tobel, always great insights here joining us on the Lombardi Line. Thanks, JVT. And have that phone charged, because the in-game will be big there today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
When we come back, we'll be joined by another VSiN host, Wes Reynolds, to talk round 4 betting strategies for the Masters as we close out this Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line right after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code VSIN. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code VSIN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Big sports day today in about an hour and 15 minutes. Final day of the NBA regular season. And in a few hours, Michael, we do have the final groups teeing off from Augusta. Fourth round of the Masters is already underway. The first groups have teed off. Tiger Woods 4 over through his first 9 holes. He is tied for last, sadly. 15 over as he makes the turn. And talk about some betting strategies, because there are still ways you can bet before the fourth round gets underway for the leaders. It's one of the co-hosts of our outstanding VSiN Golf podcast and show, Long Shots, here on the network. Wes Reynolds joins us right now. Wes, thank you so much for taking a few minutes of your time as he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. At least at the top of the leaderboard, how many guys would you consider live right now with Scottie Scheffler, your one-shot leader at 7-under?
Yeah, guys, if we go by recent trends, and this is going all the way back to the 1990s, the last time a player won the Masters more than four shots or more back was actually 1996, when Nick Faldo was down 6 to Greg Norman. And then, of course, we remember what happened, a major time meltdown from Greg Norman. So 27 straight Masters winners have been within 4 shots after 54 holes. So it kind of appears to me, sadly for me, having a Xander Schauffele 5 back, that we got a 5-guy tournament here with Scotty, Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, Max Homa, Ludwig Gobert, and Bryson DeChambeau. And then if you extend that a little bit, 28 of the last 33 Masters winners were in the Sunday final group. So our final pairing today is Colin Morikawa and Scotty Scheffler. So yeah, I wonder, I don't know. I feel like some of these guys, if you're not within four, that you're too far back. However, they do have a couple different pin placements you can attack today. The course looks like it's softening up. So maybe we're going to have a Sunday, and maybe more are in the tournament than we think. But if I go by recent trends and recent data, it's a 5-guy tournament.
Hey, Wes, you said different pins. Is it different than the typical Sunday pin placement that we're used to seeing?
A couple, when I was just eyeballing it here, Michael, a couple of these are a little bit different. And look, whatever you do, and it's the key to the Masters every single year, you have to score on the par fives. And par five scoring makes up about 72% since 2009 of the total scoring in this event. So like you look at John Rahm, who won last year, he's 12 under par, 10 under of that was on the par five. So especially today, and really hopefully they've been doing it throughout the entire week, you got to take care of the par fives. If you make a five, it almost feels like you're making a bogey, especially today.
No question. Wes Reynolds joining us right now here at Wes Reynolds One, also host of VSiN Tonight as well here on the network, and co-host of Long Shots. As far as some of these guys, you talk about the final grouping here. Scheffler 7-under. He's minus 115 to win. Colin Morikawa, the second choice, plus 350 now. What do you make of a Max Homa who goes 17 pars, one single bogey yesterday? He leads the tournament in strokes gained approach so far and is actually an underdog to Ludwig Gobert, his playing partner, who's a shot behind him right now coming into today. What's your thought on Homa there as that third choice on the odds board?
Yeah, look, I gotta say, I've been impressed with Homa, and he arrived here with very little fanfare. He just had not really contended much this year. He's a regular winner on the PGA Tour, and I think what we saw, he was the best player on our losing American team over at the Ryder Cup, and then won last November in an event in South Africa. But he really had not been playing that great coming in. But you know, he was kind of nervy at the beginning and then really settled in and you know, made 17 pars, a great par save at 18. He's really been putting well. And look, that's the weakness with Scottie Scheffler, is he can be a little shaky with the putter. We saw that in Houston when he couldn't get in the playoff and make that 5-footer on the 18th there. So, you know, Homa of that top four with Scottie, with Colin Morikawa, with Gobert, and Homa, if you're relying on the guy to make big putts in big situations, Homa would be certainly your choice here. So Ludwig, look, I'm not sure yet. He's never been here before. This is his first major championship. Not only tried to be the first debutant since Fuzzy Zeller in 1979, he had never played in a major championship. So I wonder how Ludwig is going to be. We kind of saw yesterday that Nikolai Højgaard, when he got a share of the lead, he got a little nervous and hit a couple bad shots and gave a couple away down the stretch. So Ludwig obviously is going to be a big time player over the next few years, but it's tough to trust when he's never been in this situation before.
And what do you think of Morikawa? I mean, the first nine is going to really set it up for the second. Yeah, obviously is. And Morikawa yesterday was sensational in the first nine. Do you think he can repeat that, Ben? I mean, Wes?
He certainly can, Michael, because he stepped up in big situations. This is a guy that we do kind of forget. He's going for the third leg of the career Grand Slam. He's already won two major championships. And, you know, coming in, I didn't expect much out of him because he really hasn't given you anything to expect lately. The approaches have been off. He's been weak with the driver. But, you know, he steps up in big situations. He springs to life, I think, when it matters. He's putting very well here. The putting has really improved over the last few years. So I don't want to discount this guy at all. I think, you know, Scottie Scheffler at odds on is much the man to beat here, but you can't discount this guy because all of a sudden it's like there he is in a major championship yet again.
And no question. He's gained over a stroke with the flat stick this week on the field in Colin Morikawa. Wes, right now, a bunch of the guys who are around that five over range are starting to tee off here. So you're kind of in that T30 to T40 range. Seems like based on the very early scores that this is a softer course and conditions by far the best they've been throughout the four rounds. Any of these guys further down the board you're targeting, not necessarily obviously on the outright board, but maybe to go low to target maybe their round score under or target in a matchup or the, you know, lowest fourth round score specifically. Anybody you see there that really pops to you based on the first three rounds of data?
Yeah, I have been playing a few matchups here. A couple of them are already off, but still a couple yet to tee off. I went with Ricky Fowler -106 over Ryan Fox. It was just the way that Fox finished yesterday. He had a triple on 17 and then bogeyed the 18th. He really fell apart in that matchup against Danny Willett. Ricky kept it together, one under par, solid round yesterday. And like you mentioned, Ben, the scoring conditions were very difficult yesterday. And I think that they're a little bit easier. So, you know, we're always looking before these main groups tee off, kind of the calm before the storm. And then we hear the commentator goes, well, there's 67 out there today. And it's usually somebody that's one of the early groups. And then they think that the leader is going to duplicate it. Well, you're not, because it's major championship pressure. But in terms of a couple matchups, I mentioned Ricky Fowler over Ryan Fox. Will Zalatoris about even money over Tyrrell Hatton. Tyrrell had kind of a tough finish yesterday, and he had to play with Tiger Woods and, you know, play with Tiger Woods and watch him shoot 82 yesterday. So Zalatoris just kind of been grinding, and he's been hanging in there. He's been very good in final rounds so far this year. So that's another one to look at. And then Cam Smith -114 over Benny Ahn. Benny Ahn has really been living with the putter for 3 days. So I wonder if he can keep that up for 4 days. Smith is just such a wizard around the green and really good on approach. I like Cam Smith in that matchup today.
All right, Wes, tell me what will the winning score be today? Don't tell me the winner, but what's the winning score going to be today?
I am going to say 9 under par, 279 today. So I think you're going to see the lead groups. They were struggling to make par yesterday, but I think you're going to see a couple of these guys in those final groups maybe shoot a 70 or a 69. So I am going to say 9 under par, 279.
I think that is totally fair on a 9 under. Does Scheffler get it done, Wes?
Yeah, it's hard for me to go against him as much as I want to. I want there to be 7-8 guys in contention down the stretch. I think we all want that just from a viewership standpoint. But yeah, I think he's going to get it done. He's much the best of it. He's number one in approach on tour, number one tee to green, number one strokes gained off the tee, number one proximity. I could go on and on. He's been much the best player in the world. And I think number one gets it done today.
And the scary part, Michael and Wes, it's that, you know, Scheffler, it feels, Wes, like he's had like his B-minus game this week, and yet he leads the Masters by one going into Sunday. That kind of says it all.
He doesn't make mistakes. And that, you know, I'd never compare anybody to Tiger, but that's how Tiger won so much, is that he made the fewest mistakes. Yeah. And Scottie Scheffler, even when he makes a mistake, he's able to recover like yesterday.
No doubt on that. So they're going to get underway here in a couple hours' time, about 2.5 hours from now. Scheffler and Morikawa, your final group, gets underway. Follow him at Wes Reynolds on Twitter. And I'm excited. I get to host with Wes, Michael, a couple days this week on VSiN Tonight. Wes, looking forward to that, man.
Yeah, looking forward to being with you, Ben.
Absolutely. All right, Wes, best of luck with your bets here. Final round of the
Thanks,
Masters.
Wes.
Michael, always, as always, a pleasure hosting with you as well as we wrap up the Lombardi Line.